From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, emerging artists for the first couple hours tonight. Full information at our coasttocoastam.com website. Great artists, by the way. Later on tonight, God Reconsidered. It's an amazing story about extraterrestrials, what's out there in the universe. Here's what's happening. Two construction workers have been killed when an Amtrak train traveling from New York to Savannah, Georgia, Sunday struck a backhoe that was on the tracks about 15 miles south of Philadelphia. The crash derailed the lead engine. Initial reports said approximately 31 passengers were being transported to area hospitals, none of those with life-threatening injuries. Reports from witnesses on the train indicate that the Amtrak conductor blew the train's horn, but construction workers were unable to clear the tracks in time. Gosh, I got to tell you, if I were in that backhoe, I would have jumped out. First sad story there. A New Jersey woman accused of fatally stabbing her boyfriend during a dispute over their Xbox console has pleaded not guilty to reckless manslaughter and weapons charges. Authorities said that Aisha Barr stabbed 26-year-old Christopher Green at their Newark home last May. They say the couple was arguing over an Xbox when the dispute turned physical. Authorities say the 29-year-old grabbed a kitchen knife and stabbed Green in the chest. He was taken to a hospital where he died a short time later. Ted Cruz leads Donald Trump in the Republican nomination contest in Wisconsin, according to a Fox Business Net poll. Cruz garners about 42% among Wisconsin's likely winner-take-all GOP primary voters, while Trump receives 32%. Let's check in with online columnist Dr. John Curtis, who's been with us through this entire primary process. Well, it's coming down to it, John, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, Wisconsin is, about 42, I think, delegates there. But it's not really a winner-take-all state. It's winner-take-all only if you get a certain number of congressional districts. So it's conceivable the vote will split again in Wisconsin, and it looks at this point that Cruz is going to win Wisconsin. But remember that he's, you know, several hundred delegates behind Trump, and they're heading into the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic, where Trump is very strong. Kasich is virtually nowhere, and yet he's on all the talk shows talking like, you know, somehow he's the nominee of choice for the Republican Party. Rentz Priebus, the RNC chairman, is speculating about who was going to be the nominee, saying it will either be Trump, Cruz, or Kasich. Now, how can it be Kasich when Kasich is not even really, he didn't really, George, win his own state of Ohio, even though it says he won it. They opened the primary was an open primary, and the Democratic Party had thousands and thousands of Democrats crossing over to vote for Kasich because the DNC is very worried about a Trump candidacy with Hillary. So you're talking about a candidate who hasn't won one state, and yet he's asking people to believe that he's the grown-up, running in the race, and he's the one that everybody should be looking at in a brokered open convention. But it does look, and this is the problem for Trump, losing a substantial number of those delegates in Wisconsin is going to really increase the chances very strongly this is going to go to a broker convention.
Right, as I've been saying, John, since this primary even started, I just have a feeling.
And they despise Trump inside the party. You've got all of these former candidates, like Bush, who is putting all his capital, really everything that he has left, and Romney, and you go down this list of insiders who are all sabotaging the Trump candidacy. So but here's the problem with the entire scenario of the anti-Trump campaign, that if you go that route and Trump has the lion's share of the delegates heading into the convention and you sabotage him, he's going to bolt and he's going to run as a third party and hand this election essentially over to Hillary, assuming that Bernie doesn't make, recently, five out of the last six primaries in the Democrats has been won by Bernie Sanders. Now, Hillary, and he's expected to win Wisconsin on Tuesday. So if Bernie can pull out a win in his native state of New York, even though Hillary looks like she has a substantial lead right now, then all bets are off for Hillary Clinton if Bernie can pull off a big northeastern state.
Yeah, I think she's going to creep and get the delegates, but it's going to be close on that end. But are you ready to make a little side bet with me on the Republican end yet, or we're going to wait?
Well, what would you like to wager on?
I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be a brokered convention.
Yeah, I think it's certainly looking like that. I thought that if Trump could pull out Wisconsin, that he might get to the magic number. I think right now. Well, look, you still got some very big delegate-rich states in the Northeast and also California. So this thing's going to go down to the wire. But if he doesn't get Wisconsin and Cruz gets the lion's share of the vote, I do think you're right on the money that this thing is heading for an open convention.
All right, John, we'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you Tuesday night, actually. A Japanese submarine made a port call in the Philippines, the first in 15 years. Why? Because it's a show of growing military cooperation amid tension triggered by China's growing assertiveness in the South China Sea. Gosh, I hope that doesn't blow up. A study involving people with diabetes has shown that belly size is a stronger predictor of a dangerous kind of heart disease than body mass index. The study released at the American College of Cardiology conference in Chicago was based on 200 people with diabetes who had not shown any symptoms of heart disease. Researchers found that those with larger waist circumferences were more likely than smaller-bellied people to have problems with the heart's left ventricle, which pumps oxygen-rich blood to the brain and the rest of the body. Let's check in with our expert, of course, the author of many books on the heart, including Hidden Causes of Heart Attack and Stroke, Christian Wild. Christian, your reaction to this study?
Well, we sure got to get a hold of this epidemic of diabetes, and it's just growing. It's among our young people. You know, more than 60 years ago, a French physician, I think, was the very first to observe that people with larger waist had a higher risk of premature heart disease and death than people who had trimmer waist and carried their weight around their hips and their thighs. Now, today, 60 years later, more studies, including this one today you just referenced, George, continue to add to the earlier concept. But in fact, that those with diabetes are at even greater risk. The researchers, in evaluating the heart function of the study participants, recorded that left ventricle, as you just said, got progressively worse as the waist sizes got bigger. The risk goes up when a waist size that is greater than 35 inches for a woman and greater than 40 inches for a man. On my website tonight, there's a free calculator where you can quickly monitor and measure your own body mass index, which is still very important to know. In regard to the heart disease issue that this study references, how waist size takes its toll on the left ventricle, and as the waist size increases, leading to cardiomyopathy as we know it, CHF, George, you and I have talked about congestive heart failure and the 5 million in the U.S. who are dying of it. And they did find that the waistline circumference to be a stronger predictor of heart failure, even more than the total body weight. And when you and I are going to be on together May 1st on Sunday evening, we're going to talk a lot about congestive heart failure, stem cells, starting from Dolly the sheep. Incidentally, George, Dolly the sheep died of about, she lived 7.5 years, if you've ever wondered.
The clone sheep.
The clone sheep, and she died of tumors that had taken over her body. So we'll be talking about the progress of stem cells from that point on.
All right, Christian, thanks. Christian's website, myheartbook.com. Launch, land, repeat. That's the approach of Jeff Bezos' space company, Blue Origin. It's taking to test its new Shepard, which launched and landed safely on Saturday. The launch in West Texas is the third for the new Shepard rocket, which is named after Alan Shepard, the first American to go to space. This is starting to work out really well for them. Up next, we're going to talk about Rita's World, A View from the Non-Physical. Frank DeMarco back on Coast to Coast. Also, he's the author of The Cosmic Internet. I talked with him about that a couple of years ago. Rita's World, what's that title mean? I'll have Frank explain it when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. You're going to love this program tonight. Frank DeMarco with us, back with us, co-founder of Hampton Roads Publishing, and for a number of years was the chief editor. He is an author, conducts workshops on communicating with guidance. Frank became accustomed to having conversations with disembodied entities he calls the guys upstairs. But a few years ago, he came into contact with the mind of Ernest Hemingway and began a wide-ranging discussion of Hemingway's life and work. Several of his books, The Cosmic Internet, of course, and Rita's World, which we're going to talk a lot about tonight. Frank, welcome back.
George, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I hope you are and everybody associated with your life, my friend.
Yes, indeed.
Great. Let's talk about Rita's World. Rita was a real person, was she not?
Oh, yes, still is. But I know what you mean. Yes, she was. Rita was a PhD psychologist, actually. She was a big deal in the field of criminal justice. And way back in 1979, she did a gateway with Bob Monroe, and it opened up her mind so much that she put in for early retirement, came down here, here being Virginia, and in 1980, she had her husband come down and build a house before she got here. When she got here, Bob Monroe gave her the keys to his new lab, where they have special audio effects to get people into altered states.
Yeah.
And for 4 years, she and Martin ran that that lab. Now, at the time, she was, 1980, so she was 60. I didn't meet her until she was 80, which is the year 2000. And that was a story in itself. It's been told many times. But Rita, during the times that she was running that laboratory, she would have people in an altered state, and they would have their own agenda. But if they got through with their agenda before the time was up, Rita had questions. What's it like on the other side, you know? Is there an afterlife? Well, clearly there's an afterlife, so tell us about it. And she couldn't get satisfactory answers. So you got very vague answers like, it's hard to explain, you know, or everything's fine here. Well, that didn't really help her much. And so she had this unfinished list of questions. Well, she and I met, in 2000, when she was 80,
mm-hmm.
and we began doing sessions every week. I would go into an altered state, and she would ask the questions. Well, as we learned, the better the questions, the better the answers you can get. And her questions were wonderful because she had that academic training. She had this long backlog of questions that were unanswered from her time with the people in the black box, and she had her own very profound experiences in altered states over the years. So she began asking these questions, and I would just, you know, I would answer them as best I could. And, of course, I don't know if you're familiar with working from an altered state, but, I mean, to me, it just feels like I'm lying there talking about things that I know nothing about.
Are you awake?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was never a trance medium. I'm awake, and my mind is actively participating. But it's sort of the equivalent of doing improv. You know, you're saying what comes to mind as it comes to mind. And the trick really is not to judge it, but to allow it to go through, okay? You don't want to censor it with logic or with questions. Because as soon as you do that, that's important to do later so that you don't become a total flake. But you can't perceive and criticize at the same time. You have to do them alternately.
So while you're doing these sessions with Rita, you're both learning things, are you not?
Oh, yeah. It changed our world, changed our lives.
Then she dies. What happens?
Well, she died in 2008, and by that time, I had already transcribed not all of our sessions, but 22 of them, and I put that together into a book that I called The Sphere and the Hologram. That didn't actually come out until after Rita was gone, but she died in March, and a month or so later, I had a couple of dreams about her, which I took to be no reason to go into them here, but I took them to be her saying, you know, I'm fine, don't worry about it. And then didn't hear from her again until December of 2014. And there again, I had a dream, and in the dream, Rita said, okay, it's time to go to work. So, okay. So my method of doing these things is to sit down early in the morning with my journal, and I write it all out in longhand. I'll either pose a question or I'll say, okay, I'm ready, you know, good, let's start.
and then I'll take it down as fast as I can scribble. And then comes the the chore of transcribing onto the computer, and then I send it out to the Monroe list and others. When the day after that dream, I sat down, sure enough, there she was, and off we went.
Does she come up at will, or do you have to summon her? How does that work?
It like most things with guidance, it's more a matter of allowing than summoning. If you have somebody in mind, say you, George, want to talk to your grandfather who died years ago, presumably. If you hold him in mind and you were willing to sit down and try and write it, you know, you at first it's going to feel like you're making it up. And if you'll do that, you might prime the pump and you might surprise yourself. That's the easiest way to describe what goes on. It's not quite that simple, but nearly. It's a very, very simple, easy process. I was just reading a friend of mine, Kevin Turner, who's one of the trainers at TMI, and he wrote a book, and he was quoting Michael Harner as saying, it's so easy, it's embarrassing. And in my experience, that's the truth.
Well, let's talk about some of the messages and some of the information, Frank, that Rita's trying to give us through you. Is she talking about the other side, how to prepare when you die? What is she trying to tell us?
Well, we're in the unique situation here that I knew her when she was on this side trying to get that information, and
right.
I was trying to help her bring it through. Now she's on the other side, and she has not only her own experience there, but she has the memory, the active memory, of what it's like to not understand it on this side. So it helps us both, I think, that she can give me... I tease her sometimes because I say, you know, you were a teacher all this time. You're still, like most teachers, you can talk about anything for 50 minutes and then you stop, you know. and we'll sit and our sessions will last about an hour or so. She began right away by saying that the most important thing to remember is you're always in connection with the other side. Even though I still use that terminology, I now understand that it's a mistake to say it, but we'll use it for the moment, okay? She said, we're always in communication, and the other side, the non-physical world, is right here. We don't experience it through our physical senses, but you can experience it through your intuition and through your mind. The second part of it is the most important part, in a sense, and this is what gradually built a whole new story for us. We are perhaps misunderstanding the world because we're thinking of it as life and then an afterlife, if there is an afterlife, rather than thinking of it as life that goes on, and us being here in the physical and then being in the non-physical and then coming back in the physical again, perhaps, or perhaps staying in the non-physical. It is a continuity, and that's a little hard for people to get as an initial concept. It's hard enough to say, look, you're sitting there and you can see your physical surroundings. The non-physical surroundings are there the same as you are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I once talked to a friend of mine who's a physicist, and he was talking about the number of dimensions in the world, and he had come up with a theory that would give us 6 rather than 12 that science is thinking about.
Right.
And I said, well, okay, but Ron, wouldn't we have to be in all of those dimensions anyway? And he looked at me and he said, are you sure you're in the right line of work? Well, but you see, if it holds for the physical dimensions, it also holds for the non-physical dimensions. You can't be in height and width, but not in length, right? You can't be in the physical and not in the non-physical, but we don't experience the non-physical as separate. I'm skipping way ahead here, but what we eventually came to, what she explained to me is, we experience the 3 dimensions of height, width, and length, and then anything else that we experience, we sort of lump into our experience of time. And if we come to actually begin to experience more dimensions, our experience of time changes because it sort of gets subtracted from them, if you see that. Now, that's a lot right there. I mean, if she didn't give me anything else, that would be a lot to chew on. But that was the beginning of showing how the non-physical world and the physical world, which she calls the 3D and the non-3D, not only intersect, but they're absolutely the same thing experienced differently.
Did she impart anything that we should be concerned with, Frank?
Say some more about that.
Should we be concerned with anything on the other side? I mean, was she giving you any kind of messages of doom and gloom?
Oh, no, no, far from it. The guys told us years ago, all is well, all is always well. And that has been a very challenging statement for a lot of people because they feel like they may think it's heartless, you know. They may say, well, wait a minute, you can't say that in a lifetime.
All right, hold on, Frank. We're going to hit the break, but we're going to come right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest, Frank DeMarco, for the first couple hours, we'll take calls with Frank about the other side next hour, but we're talking about his book, Rita's World, about a woman named Rita who conversed with him when she was alive, but now she's doing the same thing on the other side, so stick with us on this. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Frank DeMarco with us as we talk about Rita's World. Frank, and I was noticing in the book, your table of contents are based on years, where you start December of 2014, of course, then you go into January and February with all. Tell me about that, about the breakdown.
Well, once we started, I just kept going and doing it every morning, and it went on until about the middle of May when there was a pause. And that pause continued until this last February, actually. And we've done what it looks like it'll be a third book between February and last month. I don't know that I can give you a breakdown in terms of logic. It's just, you know, she brings the subject up and carries it through according to her own plan.
Give us an example for people who don't have the benefit yet of reading the book, and they will soon enough. But give us an example of the communication contact with you and what she's trying to give you, what kind of information.
Well, I think she's basically trying to give information not only for me but for anybody who reads it to say, here's what the meaning of life really is. Now, that's a very broad statement, but let's put it another way. This is a way of seeing the meaning of life. And what that amounts to is, what is the interplay between the physical and non-physical worlds? Why do we have a different set of conditions in the physical world than the non-physical? What does it accomplish for us? What is it we're supposed to be doing now and why? Now, you know, George, if you remember that far, this is sort of what we were talking about with the cosmic internet.
Mm-hmm.
But
same
this,
thing.
Though, is coming from Rita's point of view rather than from the guys, and there is a distinction. She's saying, basically, in three dimensions, we are sort of riding this one moment, the ever moving present moment. And as far as we're concerned, the past falls away and it's as if it was gone. And the present is as if, the future is as if it wasn't even created yet. But, you know, if you think about it a little bit, that's not a very sensible way for things to operate. It's not like you jump from iceberg to iceberg and you have to jump before the one iceberg disappears. And while you're in the air, the other iceberg hasn't appeared yet. Really, from a non-physical point of view, all moments of time exist, and they continue to exist. And they can move among a long time the way we can move along space. That's at least the way that I have put it together from what Rita has said.
The information that she has given you over the years here, that you've put into the book Rita's World, is it something that was new to us? Did we sense this before? Did we know this before? What kind of revelations were here?
I think it would depend a lot upon what you had read and what you made of it, because everything here is probably somewhere else. You know, whether you could, I don't know where it would be. Some of it is in Seth, probably, which is, you know, always the gold standard for these things. But there were others as well. I have a friend who tells me that he's seen them in the Betty books, for instance. But Rita has the advantage, being a teacher, of being able to make all of this so clear and knowing her audience very well. She knows what we haven't understood yet. So that, for instance, you know, people will have a near-death experience, and they'll come back and they'll describe various stages, you know, going through the tunnel and having the judgment and all this, and the river that you have to cross or not cross, and if you do cross it, you can't come back, and all that. Rita's descriptions are somewhat different, but she said the difference is in when somebody goes over to the other side and comes back, their experiences outside of time have to be crammed into our 3D kind of thought, you know? everything that we think really tends to wind up in three dimensions, and it winds up in moving through space or time. So even when we talk about the other side, we talk about it as if it were geographically different, as if we had to walk somewhere, you see, or catch a cab. So all kinds of descriptions come back, and I think they're probably all as accurate as people could make them, but the descriptions are partly the idiosyncrasy of the person's mind who's recording it. Partly it is the linguistic difficulties of untwisting these distortions that get put in there, because we're looking at it in 3D terms when it's not a 3D experience. So the short answer to your question would be probably whatever Rita is telling me has been told before, but the longer, slightly longer answer would be, but they may not sound quite the same. It would, you know, you'd really have to look at it.
Are these conversations similar to like the Seth readings and other types of communications, or was she totally different?
The way we work is different. For one thing, you know, Jane Roberts would always be in a trance when she did her sessions. So she would come out of it usually not even remembering what she had said, just as Edgar Cayce started the same way. I'm not a trance medium, and this is a very different way of working. I'm always right there, and in fact, it's like having a conversation over the internet, you know? I'm doing my side, and I'm getting responses from another side. Well, I don't see the person there, and I don't, you know, for all I know, it's somebody else using their typewriter, their computer typewriter. Shows you how old I am, huh? So the process for me is just as simple as having a conversation, but just recording what comes as it comes. We joke, we make fun of each other. We have fun. It's natural.
How long do the lessons in the sessions last?
Usually they last about an hour, because that seems to be when I get a little tired.
You get tired. So you're the one who ends it.
Usually. Sometimes, though, she'll say, no, you're getting tired, stop. Or sometimes she'll say, that's a good place to stop, because that ends this particular topic, you know, and we'll go on afterwards. She looks out for me, actually. She watches my energy better than I do.
Frank, she seems to apply and talk a lot about our 3D world and the non-3D world. That seems to be important to her.
Yes, because if you remember, the very first thing she said is they are both part of the same thing. You could call it like the all D if you wanted to look at it that way. But because we in the 3D don't experience the non-3D except through intuition and except through our minds, she's trying to say, okay, here's what is going on. Here's the part you're not seeing, and here's how it intersects with your life. Because our lives here are apparently very focused on creating who we're going to be. You know, your life gives you choices, and you make those choices. And if you make the choices consistently one way, you become more like that. If you make them another way, you become more like that. And if you waffle back and forth, well, you become somebody who waffles back and forth. At the end of that time, you don't cease to exist. You just cease to exist as a body. You're now in the non-3D. But again, the language makes it so difficult to hang on to. Again, remember that the non-3D is right here as well. I think this may explain why some people have experienced ghosts, to tell you the truth.
Oh, really? Tell me more.
Now, this isn't what Rita has said. This is what I've thought, though, from thinking about her, what she's saying. Assuming that the non-3D and the 3D are actually physically in the same spot, you can see that according to the stories of ghosts, it requires them to gather a certain amount of energy, and either it's emotional energy because they're angry, or it's because people have contacted them and they're taking the energy of the people in 3D. But when they get enough energy, sometimes they can even move things, you know, like a poltergeist, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Often they can appear, and they don't appear, you know, fully formed. You wouldn't mistake them necessarily for somebody in the body, but people have seen, you know, like a floating head and shoulders or something.
That's right, yeah.
Now, again, this is not from Rita. This is my interpolation of what she has said. It's all in the same space. They are aware of us, and many of us are aware of them. And in fact, I would make a small bet everybody is aware of them at some level or another.
tell me a little bit about the big message that she tries to impart about the meaning of life. How important is this? What are we building ourselves up for? Religion will tell us we're trying to be good so we can go to heaven. I think there's more to that.
Yes, you wouldn't put it that way, although, well, let's leave that aside for the moment. My own personal opinion is anything that has been in scriptures was probably somebody's direct experience that they tried to express, and it gets garbled when you put it in 3D terms, and people who haven't had the experience look at it and say, well, this is probably wrong. They probably meant this, and they change it to try to make sense of it, you know, but that's a different story. Again, Rita would say this, you're here, a whole bunch of materials were mixed and were placed into the earth at one time in one place. So they decided, let's put George Norrie here. Now, in a way, George, now this is, and again, you're going to come into linguistic difficulties. In a way, George Norrie never existed. That particular bundle of traits were never put together in that way, and therefore, you are something new. It is as if you were created out of nothing. And the religions have said that. In another way, of course, you've been around, all the various strands that comprise you have been around before, so you haven't been created out of nothing. But the specific George never existed before and will never exist again in this form. Your time here is being spent choosing. And I don't know that there are big, necessarily moral issues or world-changing issues. They could be. But you're having to choose, what are my traits going to be? How am I going to reconcile the various things within me that really sometimes they seem like they're at war with each other, or sometimes they seem like they haven't even met, you know? There are parts of myself that are just so strange to me. And your job as during your life, your job, your opportunity is to make the best of what you have and choose how you want to be. My favorite example is if somebody chooses that in any circumstance they're going to try to come out of love and openness, if they choose that deliberately and consistently, they're going to be a very different person at the end of that life than if they had chosen otherwise. At the end of the life, then is the culmination of our 3D lives, because then George becomes a mind in this community of mind that is the 3D, the non-3D. You have your memories, you have your experiences, you have your values, you have your traits, your skills. All of that is useful to the other side as well.
Frank's got a little crackle in his phone, folks. It's not your radio. It's usable, but there's a little static that pops up.
It's very annoying.
Frank, one thing, have you had a storm go through there or anything? I think you might have like a little loose wire outside. Just call your phone company tomorrow. Just say, I've got crackle on my line. They'll come right out and fix it for you.
All right. I'll tell them George sent me.
Yeah, you got that right.
Thank you. That may be helpful.
The other side... there is evil. There's no doubt about that.
That's right.
But you have kind of implied that Rita doesn't go there. How come?
Well, it isn't that. It's that it isn't the absolute thing that we think it is. If you were in a movie and you were playing the bad guy, because you'd have to be the bad guy because I would be the good guy, clearly. If we were in that movie, you would be acting as a bad guy and you would be doing bad things. That would be real within the context of the movie. But that doesn't mean they would be real as you as an actor. And that's what she means. That's one aspect of what she means when she said that all is well. Now, she was quoting the guys because they told us that years ago. Told us that on the night of September 11th, in fact. They said, all is well. All is always well. And Rita really had them explain that some, because that was hard for her to take at first. But if you look at this world as the ultimate, that would be like taking the film to be the reality. And it is a reality in one sense. I mean, if you watch a film, that film can emotionally move you. It can change you. It can affect your whole life. And obviously, this life that we are leading is changing us. That's what I was just talking about.
Sure. And hopefully for the better.
Well, some for the better, some for the worse. But there is a whole thing we went through on the different stages of evil, starting from evil that's just a matter of opinion and going all the way down to what really is evil and what really is good. Here's the bottom line. we're in duality. The non-physical is also in duality. People don't think about that. But again, if the non-physical and the physical are the same thing, extending beyond our particular limitations, if we're in duality, it's in duality. In fact, go back to your religions, and you've got God versus the devil, or you've got Ahriman versus, I forget the other, you understand what I'm saying. It's been there a lot. Now, there are some times when it's just a conflict of values, and let me think if I can find an example. Well, supposing one person's example, prime moving value is kindness. More than anything else, they value kindness. But supposing there's someone else whose prime moving value is courage, and more than anything else, they value courage. The first person might think that anybody who's ever involved in a war is evil. The second person might think anybody who's not involved in a war is cowardly. Neither one would be right, but from their own sets of values, they would be living their values and seeing others as either less good or as evil. Now, understand, I'm not saying there's no such thing as evil, but I'm saying a lot of what we call evil is really just a conflict of values. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. It does. When people pass on, when they die, in Rita's case, is she going to come back as another human, or is she going to stay there and, you know, give you information? At what point does that end?
I don't know, and I don't know if there's any one path. I think Rita has said some people choose never to come back. They want to continue to interact from the non-physical. But if you do come back, I don't know what the limits would be. But there is something important to say here. Remember how I said George would never be George again? You could come in, all the part that is you could come in as a strand to another being. And you wouldn't be in the driver's seat, but you would have something to say, and you would be part of what that new being had to reconcile. So to say, and this is why I think some people think reincarnation is real, and other people think it's not real, because we don't reincarnate unit to unit to unit to unit, but we first, various strands come together to create a new unit, then that unit becomes a strand in a new unit beyond that. So it totally depends on which way you look at it, whether you say, I am coming back, or you say, well, I'll be part of that new thing which is coming back. You know, it isn't the same thing.
How was this designed, Frank? Somebody put this together. This didn't happen by fluke.
No, that's right. And we are told that the non-physical world set up the physical world specifically to create what they call compound beings that couldn't be created outside of these conditions. In other words, because we're stuck here in this one present moment, we never see our lives in proportion. You know, your life had, you know, 5 years on behind you, and it may have 5 years in front of you, but it's the present moment that's the only moment that's real to you right now. And I tell people, if you doubt that, light a match and hold it under your hand, and then go to some other time.
Yeah.
You know, well, that intensity changes us. We are terrific. Next to them, they say, we are terrifically intense but limited. They are much less limited but much less intense. They once, this wasn't from Rita, but when she was asking me questions, the guys once gave us a couple of analogies, and they said it's like their star glow and we're a flashlight. You know, they're not very intense, but they extend so far.
All right, Frank, we're going to come back and talk more about your work, Rita's World, and we'll take phone calls about the other side. Here's our next emerging artist, Pamela Royal and Marie Wilson. The song is Andy's Biscuits. They're from British Columbia and Canada.